Musically meditated.
Musically meditated. Musically meditated.
Cool, yeah. Welcome to Musically Meditated Podcast. This is episode 21. We're doing big things, right, Stratton?
Huge things.
Huge things. Maybe, yeah, it's going to be 40 before we know it. This episode is a special episode for St. Patrick's Day. I hold that holiday close to my heart. I'm Irish. You know, it's all about family for the most part and unity and obviously music. And our guest today is currently an Indiana state delegate, Democratic precinct committeeman. He's a part of the Economic Development Board for Hobart, and he was a local 150 operating engineer. We got Craig Brooks, a.k.a. Brooksy. What's up, Brooksy?
Hey, I'm glad to be here. You guys got a great thing going on. And
thanks, man.
Don't forget about Planning Commission I'm on as well.
Oh, Planning Commission too. So hit him up if you have any issues. We'll leave you his cell phone number and his email address, right?
No. Believe it or not, I get a lot of calls.
Good.
But yeah, it's good to be here, you guys. And, you know, we're kicking off the St. Patty holiday week. So I am glad to be here to talk about the holiday, what it means.
Some Irish music, too. The thing is Brooksy is a piper. He's a bagpiper. And how long have you been doing that for?
I picked up the chanter in the year 2000. I was dredging Lake George, and that's when I started, May of 2000. And when you start off on the chanter, the practice chanter, it takes sometimes a year or two before you go to the pipe, some quicker than others. For me, it was 8 months to graduate from the chanter to the pipes.
What does the chanter do?
The chanter is like a recorder. A new piper, instead of going out and spending $16,000 to $2,000 on a set of pipes, not knowing if they can master it, we start them off on a $50 chanter. The more ornamentation on the instrument, the more expensive.
Okay. And so, like you said, recorder, so kind of like a flute?
Is it like a flute? Yeah, thing? Yeah, it's basically what it is. It's a the chanter on the bagpipes is the melody pipe. That's we've got 9 notes. And so, again, instead of spending all the money on a set of pipes, and some people don't make it right off the bat, you know, and they'll be stuck with a bunch of kindling.
Okay. So like I had to say, for me, it's like a practice guitar, right? If your kid wants to play guitar, here's a practice guitar and an amp, and if it doesn't work out, you only spent, you know, $100 on it instead of buying them like an American-made Fender or something.
Exactly.
Like that,
right? And I brought my practice chanter and the Great Highland pipes, which were more known for, and I brought my small set of fireside pipes, which are exactly what they sound like. They're meant to be played inside by the fire.
Cool. Oh. That's really cool. To backtrack with the story, how I remember you when I was a kid, my dad used to take me with him to the bars in Hobart when I was little in the 80s, I guess, when you could do that shit. And it was before the Hobart games, and I remember you would be there, but you would always play, like the Hobart fighting song, like the football song,
the
Notre Dame song,
yeah,
through his hand. You did this.
Yeah.
What was that all about? It was awesome. I remember it. Like, it made a huge impression on me.
It was
cool. Could you still do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I
had to put you on the spot. I love it because it was awesome.
Well, there's a story to that.
Okay.
And it goes back to when I played trumpet in the Hobart Jazz Band. And we had chairs, what we called chairs, every Monday. And what that meant is you would play your part in front of the director. Herman Matlock was our director, a great instructor, and he would place you as your ability was. Like, first chair was first, you were the best. Second chair, third chair, second section, first chair, and so on and so on. So anyway, I was playing lead second. and it came time for chairs, and I didn't have my trumpets. I didn't come home that Sunday night. I went to school from my girlfriend's house. And anyway, when it came my turn to play, I didn't have my trumpet.
Trumpets weren't on the agenda that particular evening.
Right. And so the director thought he's going to make an example of me, and he said, "Okay, Brooks, let's show us what you got there." And he knew I didn't have my trumpet. Well, the way my mind works, I immediately went back to sixth grade when they were sizing up what instrument we were going to play, and they brought mouthpieces. And according to the way your lips were shaped, they'd say, "Okay, you're going to be a cornet player. This guy over here with the big lips is going to be a tuba player. This guy's going to play trombone."
Right.
So they'd give us the mouthpiece, and they'd show us how to buzz into it, and they'd say, "Okay, play Mary Had a Little Lamb." And so my mind went right to that. And so it went like this.
That's awesome.
So anyway, we're in a jazz band, and I knew my part. I mean, I studied, I knew my part. And so without hesitation, with that popping into my head, I put my hand up to my lips, and I ripped it off.
That's awesome.
So, that being said, everybody was laughing.
Yeah.
And Herb Matlock, our director, looked up and down, and he said, "If you can do that on your hand, you can sit in that first chair." So I wound up in first chair.
There you go. So you were the first chair forever after that, that day?
Just for, we did it every Monday. But, yeah, I was blowing lead trumpet there in the Hobart Jazz Band.
I just remember that being a kid, like, you know, when you're a little kid, it's a huge impression. I mean, when weird, you know, like my dad's like, "Brooksy, do the pipes," you know, like
Bricky Fight song.
Yeah, the Bricky Fight song or the Notre Dame song. I remember that big time when I was a kid. So that's awesome, man. I'm glad you could pull that out for us. It's been a while. That's awesome. Now, what's going on with the North American Academy in Piping and Drumming? You're a member of that, or is that like a school?
That's a school that Sandy Jones, a pipe major, created some years ago up in the mountains of North Carolina. And my first instructor, professional instructor, was Greg Abbott, and he taught at that academy all summer. He actually lives in Kokomo, Indiana, and he's a school teacher. So I was at a workshop up in Traverse City, and it was my first school in bagpiping. And we were going around the room, and he pointed at me, and we were doing a 2-4 and time signature. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I started playing it, and he stopped me. He goes, "You suck." It just crushed me. And I said, "Well, that's why I'm here, to learn." And he goes, "No, you don't understand. It's horrible." And afterwards, I was so dejected. But nobody ever tells me I can't do something. So what I did was I followed him out. It was lunchtime, and I said, "Hey, I'm here to learn. I said, I'm serious about this shit." And he said, "If you're serious, get your ass up to the mountain." And he walked away.
Damn.
Yeah. And so I started asking around, what's the mountain? And that is Grandfather Mountain. That's where the school is located, in that area. Now, Sandy Jones piped at Kennedy's funeral, JFK's funeral. So I was privately tutored by Sandy Jones at one point. Only because there was nobody in that particular class, and he kind of took a liking to my thinking, I guess, that I wouldn't take no for an answer.
Right. Cool.
So I've been lucky in my career to have several instructors that were very prominent pipers. Greg Abbott, who led me to the mountain, Grandfather Mountain, or North...
Mr. Miyagi of pipes and drums. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then several other champion pipers. So the North American Academy of Piping has been around a long time. I think they're celebrating 48 years on the mountain, they call it.
How long was the school for that? Like, how long were you there?
They offer 1 week courses or 2 week sessions. And what they do, Joe, is they run 7 weeks through the summer up at this retreat up there that was actually built in the early 1700s for Episcopalian priest that would go up there on some type of a getaway, kind of like a monkhood thing.
Cool, cool.
So anyway, that's where the school is at. And there's a couple other schools that I was a part of. OSAS is the Ohio Scottish Arts School. That's at Oberlin College. That's a fine piping school. I was there for 2 summers with my wife. Three summers or weeks in different years up at North American Academy. But the most prominent was in 2016. We took the band up to the National Piping Center in Glasgow, Scotland.
Awesome.
That is like the Berklee School of Music. You know, that's where all the pros go.
You play some golf there too in Scotland?
I did.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah. Awesome. My wife and I broke away from we were there 18 days, and she booked it for me a weekend at St. Andrews, the home of golf.
Did you eat some haggis there too?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I got to throw that haggis in there.
I had a wee bit.
A wee bit?
A wee bit of haggis.
Did you get sick? Because it's just deep fried lard, right?
Well, it's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
You got lung, you got your, they call them sweetbreads with his kidneys. Put it this way, everything that they threw out from the castle that the king and queen wouldn't eat, they literally scooped it up and put it in the stomach of a goat.
Yeah, they shove parts into a goat's ass, right?
And they mix it with oatmeal, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. I heard it's delicious.
Really?
Actually, all kidding aside, it's not that bad. Each chef or each town or each village has their own
type of haggis.
Their own recipe. So
it wasn't that bad.
I'd eat it again.
Okay, fair enough. Now, who started the bagpipes thing? I don't know if that's a debate or it's very well known. From what I remember, it is a Scottish thing, correct?
Yeah. Now, The pipes that I'm going to play today are the Great Highland bagpipes. So they're the Scottish pipes. But the first bagpipes actually were discovered in Pakistan.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And they're they're very bad instruments. They still make them. The wood is rosewood. It's not the type of wood that the Scots use. It's very different from what we play. It's not the same instrument. So the Scots took it and developed it into what it is today. But throughout Europe, there's all types of different bagpipes. The Italians have the Gouda, which looks like you're hugging a gunny sack, and it's got a pipe sticking out, and it's really weird looking.
Okay.
And weird sounding.
Okay.
The Greeks had a bagpipe. The Irish bagpipes are Ilian, which is the Gaelic word for elbow. They're very different looking than the Scottish Great Highland pipes. In the effect that the drones lay across the lap instead of stand on your shoulder.
That's for the Irish ones?
Yeah, the Ilian. And the chanter is much different, where you can change the pitch. It's a very different instrument. Ilian, elbow, means that they, instead of blowing into the bag and using your arm to keep the pressure, they have a bellows under the right arm and blow up the bag. So it's a really weird, it looks like you're wrestling an octopus.
Whoa, that's crazy. I didn't know that there were so many different types. I didn't know that. Do you think that the Scottish ones sound the best and that's why they're more predominant, like in the commercial scene? Or is it the type of wood? Or
It's a totally different application. The Scottish war pipe, as they called it, were used first to by the sheep herders to communicate across the glens.
Oh.
And then they were used in the war, where the pipers would come down and scare the hell out of the enemy. And the reason they wear the tartan, like this is my Brook tartan, a family tartan from Northern Ireland, which is rare. Ireland has only 8 families on the registry, from what I understand, whereas Scotland has literally thousands, you know. So I wear this very proudly. The reason that they wore the tartan, it was like a flag, so you didn't shoot your own family. You might not know him, but you see that color and say, he's my family.
Yeah, he's my family.
He's my clan.
Yeah, he's my clan. It seems very clannish. I mean, a lot of, I don't know, the Celts or Ireland, or we'll even say the UK, it just has a very clannish vibe. You think it's like a Viking thing? The early Vikings bringing that mindset there, like in the Nordic days?
Very interesting you brought that up. My family, when I go back into the history, Brooke is the Irish spelling of my name, Brooks. It's Brooke, B-R-O-O-K-E. They were Normans that came over by water. So my name is, it means water, and Craig is the Gaelic word for rock or stone.
Cool.
So, yeah, my name means that I live on a lofty rock by the water.
There you go. There you go. I know that the Rileys... my family, my great-great-great-grandpa came here during the potato famine.
Yes.
And the name was originally O'Rolladog.
Yeah.
I know that. And I know that they were from County Cavan, but a lot of tracing it back after the potato famine, a lot of those records, they're long gone because a lot of the churches were ransacked, especially the Catholic churches. They were just ransacked, and a lot of documentation was burnt. And I think Riley means impetuous, I believe, like the term, or O'Rolladog. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't sound like you at all.
I know.
Well, you know what? It's great.
Sarcasm.
Ever since I was a wee lad, I wanted to know where I came from. And so I was drawn to this type of stuff. And always loved history. You know, I wanted to know, like, for instance, my mom's side of the family, David. That's my middle name is David, but David. They were from Transylvania. My grandma and grandpa.
Vampires, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I got a little fang here.
There you go.
So yeah, I mean, I got the vampire and the crazy Irish.
The crazy Irish, did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. I know that my mom, it's Welsh, like Whitaker, so it's Celtic, you know, but we're all mutts to a certain extent, but I always say, like, your last name is kind of what you are. That's how people know who you are. So, but Sretan, you're 100% Serbian, right?
100%.
Serbian, yeah.
That's awesome. Awesome. 100%.
Not sure much of the history. I know my both of my parents were from the hills, as they say. So, just that I think my father's side was in an area near Montenegro on the border. So, technically, he was Montenegrin. But that was more like mountainous area, rocks, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And my mom's from, like, kind of the middle of Serbia, which was not far from where he was from. But that's more like still hilly farmland. Not like the hills aren't a joke, but
right,
a lot easier to farm on.
That's what I figured all the Rileys were, because they had their own farm. The Johnson Strawberry Market on 30 that they tore down, that was the Riley family farmhouse. Yeah, because we're all buried south of 30 right there by Wagner's. It used to be Wagner's. So all the Rileys are buried there. So I always knew, like, up to my great-great-grandfather, but then that ancestry stuff came out. So I plugged all those names in, so I was able to find my great-great-great-grandfather that came over during the potato famine. It was neat, too, because they had, like, his ship documentation. Yeah. Like, he fled to Liverpool during the famine, and then from Liverpool, England, he went to Ellis Island in New York. And then from there, he went to Pittsburgh. And then from Pittsburgh, he had his kids, which was one of my great-great-grandfathers, and he made his way here to the region. So it's interesting when you look into that stuff.
It's very interesting that, you know, I think that it's important, especially for the younger kids today, to understand what that means. For us, you know, some of our grandparents may have spoke with a brogue or an accent, and so we were witnessing firsthand that generational thing of them coming over. It seems to me that the kids today don't really give a damn about that.
I agree. I agree. And it's neat to find out, because every family and every ethnicity has some sort of a struggle. Like, I'd say nowadays it's almost, I don't want to say cool to be Irish, but kind of, you know, I mean, everybody wears their green and they go out and drink heavily. And you have like figures like Conor McGregor, who's very vibrant, but very cool. But if you go back into Irish history and American Irish history, they were called the dogs of Europe. You know, they were hated. They didn't want, you know,
Irish need not apply.
Need not to apply. Like, it took a long fight and a struggle to get where they are today. I mean, I know there's so many generations, so the blood, you know, everybody is, you know, everybody's mutting out, so to speak. It's hard to be one thing from one generation, but, you know, the Irish, they definitely fought for their spot in American history, and especially like the Civil War, because that great-great-great-grandfather of mine, he fought right after Gettysburg, I found out too, because that was on there, and I thought that was really neat, you know, but Civil War especially, they called them coffin ships during the famine. You either died on the ship from Ireland to here during the famine, or if you got off, you could enlist into the Union Army, and a lot of them did that, you know. And there was down south, they fought too, you know, on the Confederate side. So you had brothers and cousins fighting against one another. Like, it's some really deep stuff. So it's good to know your heritage and your background, whatever you are.
You know, and that's interesting that we're talking about that. When the pipes came over, somebody asked me that not too long ago. I was playing for a fire chief that had passed right after he retired. He was in Porter. And they said, why do you guys play the pipes for the firemen? Well, when the Irish were looking for the jobs, they got the worst ones.
Yep.
And being a firefighter had a very short life expectancy. And so when they passed, they buried them like they did back home. And so, you know, it's a lot of you know, history that is steeped into that that transformation from Ireland to America, and it's very important to them. You know, I average around 40 to 45 funerals per year, and what it means to the people, it gives them closure. It's a very important part of saying goodbye.
It is. It is. I mean, I want them played when I die. That's for damn sure. You know, and thank you for coming out for my friend Mike Paris. You played at his funeral.
I remember.
We really appreciate that.
Well, it comes from the heart. And I just remember seeing there was a Notre Dame hat there. And I like to personalize things. I read the obituary. But when I see something like that, I went out with, I marched out of that parlor with the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, I'm sure he appreciated that. He was the biggest Notre Dame fan ever. But with the bagpipes, there's something there. Like I mentioned earlier, maybe it was a warfare thing with the Celts or the Vikings. But even with the Civil War, I know they were playing bagpipes into battle, a lot of the Irish Brigade. But there's something to be said about it. I don't know if it's just me because I'm Irish or you, but there's something sentimental that really gets my blood boiling when I hear bagpipes. Like, I want to conquer shit or I want to cry. That's it. You know, it's like I want to conquer or I want
to
cry.
There's an emotional feel to it. Like, you do get, if there's drums along with it, I get fired up. If there's no drums, I get like
teary.
I just get real reflective about life. It's crazy. It stirs me.
Stirs the spirit.
Yeah.
It does.
When I was 6 years old, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and I was watching Bozo Circus in the back room, and at 12:33, they came on and said, President Kennedy has been shot. And I ran in and told my mom that the president was shot. And she said, don't talk like that, Craig. And, of course, we only had three channels. It was all we saw. But the funeral, I was taken back when I saw Pipe Major Sandy Jones piping with the Black Watch at Arlington.
What's the Black Watch? Like a-
the Black Watch is a elite group of military pipers, pipes and drums, and they were there as well as Sandy Jones, who is a pipe major for the Air Force, pipes and drums, and that's who
played his,
and that's who taught me. So
oh, okay, that's right, that was him.
So that
okay.
That whole, you know, it was like full circle for me, and you know, I just got done reading a book on John F. Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy. And what they went through, and how they, when I say they, the world hated a Roman Catholic being in the White House.
Yeah, he was the first and only Irish Roman Catholic ever.
And to me, being Protestant.
President, yeah.
I couldn't understand what that was.
I have an explanation for you. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
When this country was founded and it started, it was all about bringing... You know, it was against religious persecution, right? So the Puritans and all of them came here.
Mm-hmm.
So you could set up shop, freedom of religion, and start your own church. But you get the funds because it's your church. So that's how America started. So when the Roman Catholicism came over here, that percentage is going back to the Vatican or the Pope, so to speak. So Americans were like, you know, you're traditionalists, like, nah. And, you know, and they would be like, we don't want some pope from across the pond telling us what to do. This is our church. We'll do what we want to do. So they didn't like that. That's what I got of all everything I've read. But
and that kind of makes sense, too, because there's a separation of church and state. And, you know, that's a fine line.
True.
But I remember, you know, being a big Notre Dame fan, Newt Rockne, when he tried to get into the Big Ten, and the KKK marched down in the South Bend, and he was so upset with that that he was going to leave.
Wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, and they burned the cross and the whole nine yards. Well, the people of South Bend or Notre Dame talked him into staying, and he vowed he would never be part of the Big Ten. He was the first coach to register as an independent, and to this day
they're still independent.
Yeah,
I never knew that. That's good history there.
History.
I didn't know that Newt was a Catholic, man. All right, right on.
So
am I. So am I. But yeah, with JFK, he they were always under attack. Now a lot of that too. I've done my research. Mm. Papa Joe didn't help any with that,
right?
Because he comes from a checkered, scandalous past himself when he was a bootlegger and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this either, but after I read it, like, his father-in-law was a Fitzgerald. That's where JFK's middle name comes from, so that's his mom's maiden last name. And he was a part of the Carnegie Hall, you know, like, he was one of the originators, and that's where the Irish started to get into politics, because like you said, they were one of the first ones here. Yeah. They got the shittier jobs, but they fought their way in, you know, to, like, firefighters, policemen, and then they got into politics, you know, but there was a huge underworld, and the Irish were like the first mafioso types, you know, but they were able to get themselves into, you know, more working class, respectable jobs instead of being a gangster. So that's when the Italians came over and they kind of filled that. And when the Irish still wanted a part of it, they were just exited out. They're like, no, you're into politics, you're police, you're firefighters. We don't want you here anymore. And then they put up their little fight, and that's why the St. Valentine's Day massacre happened in Chicago and so on and so forth, you know. So, yeah, Irish history is – there's a lot of violence, that's for damn sure.
Well, you know, and going back to the Joseph Kennedy, he was the ambassador for England, and the kids were raised over in London, and that was during Winston Churchill's regime. And interestingly enough, John F. Kennedy wrote a book for his thesis for his senior year that I'm reading now, actually, and it's called Why England Slept. and it's about Churchill not rearming. It's called the rearmament. And Germany conquered them because they slept on it. They just said, oh, you know,
passive
we'll rely on the Americans and we'll rely on France. And so.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks, England, for being passive because we had to bail you
real
out.
Cool. Kind
of. Real cool.
Yeah.
Real cool. But getting into Irish history and the flag, too, you know, it's green, white, and orange. You see it all the time. Like I said, it's almost popular now with Conor McGregor and St. Paddy's Day. But it does represent something. I know what it means. I know you do, too.
Yes.
Go ahead and describe it for us, Brooksy. I know you broke it down pretty good earlier.
Well, the way it was explained to me by an old Irishman that was from the north, he was an Orangeman, he said that the green represents the Catholic, the orange, the Protestant, and the white in the middle is the hope that they would come together one day. So for me, that stuck with me. And when I was asked to play my bagpipes to help raise money for the Irish Children's Foundation, it was really a big thing in my life because they brought these kids over from both sides, the green and the orange. And there it was. I was part of the white.
Right. Bringing them together. That's cool.
And
that's really cool.
You know, it meant a lot to me to be a part of that and help that foundation do what they did as far as bringing the Catholics and the Protestant together. Kids together.
Because the Republic of Ireland is the flag with the green, white, and orange.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Northern Ireland, which is its own country that is a part of the United Kingdom, which is England, Scotland, and Wales. But they're a part of the UK, and they actually have their own flag, too.
Right.
And that has the hand of Ulster on it and the white and red cross. What is that, St. Andrew's flag? Is that what that is? For England? Because that's England's actual flag is just white with the red cross. But the Northern Ireland flag's white with the red cross with that hand and then like a crown in the middle, correct?
Right. My family crest actually is painted in my Irish pub at home, and it's got
I got mine on my arm, bro.
Well,
I got you beat.
I'll be the first to admit I may go a little overboard on my ancestry, but yeah, we've got it painted on the pub wall, and it's got that red and white. Now, I don't know where that comes into play.
I think that's England's flag because I know
it is.
That Ulster, they call them Ulstermen, they always side with the politics of the crown. They're in favor of the crown. That's where we differ because I'm Irish Catholic and you're Irish Protestant, but we still love each other.
Yeah, that's right. Right. We're both friendly sons of Erin.
That's right. Exactly.
So, you know, let's talk about the North for a minute. My family comes from Fermanagh, and there's a park there, like Central Park in New York City. It's a very famous park called Brook Square. And I want to go there. I want to visit there and feel what it's like standing on my family's property.
Yeah, maybe you get a chunk back. Ask
when I
get something.
Doesn't hurt to ask.
Reprobations, baby.
You know, when I reached out to them, they're more Irish than the Irish themselves because they don't speak any form of English. They speak
Celtic or is it
Gaelic?
Gaelic, my bad. Yeah, Gaelic.
Gaelic, which
what
is
that like?
Oh. On my bagpipes, I have a shield that I made up. My first date with my wife Diana, she bought me the Celtic dictionary, and I spent about 6 months trying to figure out
how to even say shit.
Well, I wanted to come up with a saying in Gaelic that would be unique to me and the gold set of pipes that I own, and they found me, I should say. And on that plaque, it says Shime a Geoth, Shime Kiol, which means I am the breath, I am the music. Because you fill the bag with your, I am the wind. Geoth is like gale, the wind, the breath. And so anyway, I had that made up, and I've got those on all my sets of pipes.
That's badass. If you've been to Ireland itself a whole a whole bunch of times, correct?
I've been there twice.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Did you get married there? I think you told me before.
I got married south of Dublin in Dalkey, in Fitzpatrick Castle.
Cool. That's awesome. And you mentioned you're going to go to Northern Ireland coming up soon?
Yes. Next month, I'm going with a group to Scotland, and then we're going to go over, it's just a 20-minute flight from Inverness over to Belfast. And that's where they have the Titanic Museum. And
yeah, the Belfast is that troubled area forever. Yeah. Like the shirt that I'm wearing, this is for the 12 Irish hunger strikers and Bobby Sands. If those of you don't know who Bobby Sands, if you don't know who he is, you should. Very, very powerful figure in Irish history, but just in prisoner history, too. He was a member of the Irish Republican Army, the IRA. He was accused of a bomb of some sort. So he was imprisoned, and Margaret Thatcher denied them the rights as a prisoner of war. So in protest, they starved themselves for 66 days, and they died. And he died in vain, and they do have a movie called Hunger that came out about 10 years ago. It's really, really good, so everybody should check that out. And if you really think you're having a bad day for whatever reason, he wrote a day's journal on rolling papers and shoved them up his ass and then gave them to his parents when they visited him. And it's called A Day in My Life by Bobby Sands. And it's some pretty intense content there. You know, I mean, it was hellish. And, you know, the Brits, you know, I shouldn't say the Brits, but the prison, you know, the prison guards and stuff, they didn't treat them very nicely. They were called the Blanket Men for a while, like their first protest. They refused to wear the prison outfit, you know.
It's an ugly piece of history. They were, they're martyrs to this day. And we were actually, you know, saw a plaque on one of the walls there that talked about the history in Dublin there. And it's, an ugly part of history, but unfortunately...
can't deny it. It has to be talked about.
Sometimes you have to... You have to have loss in order to gain, and that's why these people are forever immortalized.
They are because, you know, they had the IRA. You know, they've been around for, 100 years?
Right.
That started in early 1900s, but they were a part of the provisional IRA, and they were fighting against the UVA, which was the Ulster Volunteer Army, and they were on the orange side, and they were in favor of Protestantism and Ireland being a part. Northern Ireland being a part of the UK, the IRA and the Catholics, they were against it. They wanted Northern Ireland to be a part of the Republic of Ireland. So there was just always this combative, nasty, you know. I mean, Sunday, Bloody Sunday is about the 70s. What, like when they were doing a protest and a march and they just gunned down the Irish Catholics, correct?
Yeah, it was, again, it was a ugly piece of history that changed the way things, the politics over there, change them forever. And you know, like you said, Joe, it's good to talk about that stuff, to remember
because a lot of people, like I said, they think St. Patrick's Day and being Irish is about wearing green and getting drunk. Well, it's not. There's a lot more levels. I mean, to me personally, to each their own, but you know, I think about Bobby Sands and the hunger strikers and my family when it's St. Paddy's Day.
Absolutely. You know? And you know, with St. Patrick's Day right around the corner, I want to talk a little bit about that. St. Patrick was a patron saint to Ireland, and he taught the triune, the Trinity, with the shamrock, with the Father, the Son,
and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, we visited his grave while we were there as well.
Oh, it's there, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
But there's a place, I don't know if he's actually buried there, but there, it's, you know, a memorial. But the thing about St. Patrick's Day in Ireland is more of a family holiday like our Thanksgiving in America. You know, they have the parades, but it's not like I was at the Southside Irish Parade today and you get a lot of the, you know, the green beer and the... It's just the silliness
the
of
commercial
it.
Green
aspects. Beads.
Yeah.
Which...
Shamrock hats.
Like, yeah. Which I kind of... You know what? I kind of take offense to it. Somebody looked at me one time in a pub and was laughing at me. And they had one of the big hats on and an orange beard. Mm-hmm. And this gal walked up and she said, "You're laughing at him? He's the real deal. You're a wannabe. Yeah,
you're a wannabe with the big hat on, punk." Beat his ass.
So with that, I'm
not wearing that Saturday.
Better not.
So with that, fellas, I picked up the war pipes and I played him a war tune.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
Did he like that? Did he like it?
He ran.
He did run? Good. But yeah, like, because they always, I read that before, like they don't celebrate St. Paddy's in Ireland like we do here, but I'm glad you clarified that. It's more of a family thing.
It's a religious holiday.
There you go.
You know, like I said, St. Patrick was the patron saint of Ireland and went throughout the land teaching the Trinity of, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Spirit, yeah, and pushing Catholicism on all the farmers, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's what it was about back then. You'd have to go and spread the word of God. And, you know, the Irish are a very, you know, like I said, political and...
What?
Rowdy bunch and very religious and just very passionate, you know, some of the
passion
best.
Passion is the word.
Passion, yeah. Great writers, great musicians. Another thing, too, like in rock and roll, I have some info here that many might know or might not know, but the Beatles, they're all Irish descent. Ringo has the least amount, but a lot of people don't know that. You know, there's a lot of good rockers that their parents who were Irish and they were first generation, like even John Lennon, he was a big... public figure during the troubles of the 70s, like Sunday, right. Bloody Sunday, like speaking against Ireland or Northern Ireland being a part of the UK. He marched with them.
John Lennon was very political. You know, I grew up with it and, they were very, all of them were very political, but especially John Lennon.
And then Paul McCartney, I mean, his last name kind of says it. He's an Irishman. And then, Harrison, he was like, the most Irish. I think both parents were Irish, and then Ringo was a little bit, but a lot of people don't know that. And I'm a big fan of the Smiths. They're like maybe arguably the first emotional indie rock band with Morrissey, and
The Smiths.
Yeah, you love the Smiths? Okay. Yeah, from Manchester, and like they're all first generation Irish in Manchester. All of their parents were from Ireland. And then Liam and Noel Gallagher from Oasis, they're both Irishmen, and they're fiery as shit. They can't ever even get along, you know?
They don't talk.
Yeah.
They never talk, and if you ever watch...
I saw that.
Liam, like, do any interviews, he's a rock star. He just says whatever he wants all the time. He's crazy. He's passionate. Same with, like, Morrissey.
Yep.
Same with Lennon, you know, going back to the passionate one, or talking about who's passionate or not, but Kurt Cobain, too, he's an Irishman. A lot of people
didn't know that.
I've read some stuff. He would talk about his mother. I think she was more Irish than the dad, but she would always want to bring tea and Irish soda bread. And he's like, I always thought it was funny because my mom always wanted this piece of Irish in the house, but I don't think Kurt Cobain probably cared, but
yeah,
he was another passionate guy. And then, of course, U2 and Thin Lizzy. You know, you got to love Thin Lizzy. I mean,
absolutely.
They're great.
The boys are back in town.
But U2, I like their earlier stuff, but not that much anymore.
You know, like them? Since you brought that up, where we got married at in Dalkey, very small, no thanks.
Okay.
Right around the castle where we got married at is the Irish Sea Coast. And we had a videographer that took us around that area. And we went past this beautiful house, and he said, that's Van Morrison's.
Oh, Van Morrison, yeah.
We went around the corner, and there's a big castle there on the sea, and he said, that's Enya.
Cool.
Famous pop star.
Yeah.
And right next door, the castle to her castle, was
Bono?
Yeah.
Boners?
Yeah, and next to Bono was The Edge. And so, and the lead singer for... I can't think of it, but don't you forget about it.
Oh, yeah. Who is that?
I can't think
of it. We'll get back to it.
But, all those stars live right around that castle. And it's absolutely beautiful. And the reason you don't hear about it on the Irish tourism, come to Dalkey, is because they got it locked up. They don't want any...
especially some Americans. There ain't Americans there.
But interestingly enough,
we are loud.
We went into this little pub just walking distance down into the village, and it was called Finnegan's. And I was dressed up in my, you know, well, as I am now. And they made me play the pipes. And they said, it's my wedding day.
They still put you on the spot, huh?
And the guys, the guy told me, he said, this is where Bono sits and writes his lyrics in this corner until they piss him off asking for too many autographs. But you know something? The Irish don't really care for the for you two. And I'll tell you why. If you only live there 3 months out of the year, two or three months out of the year, you don't have to pay taxes.
I've heard this. I'm
so
glad you brought this up.
They live in the south of France. They live elsewhere. You know, they're...
It's like a castle tax or something weird about castles, too. I don't quote me on that, but I heard something about him in the,
so
the
castle. So they don't live there more than they have to so they don't get taxed. Hmm. And they also have a hotel in Dublin that is another thing that... That some of the Irishmen are upset about. So they're very
anti you too and Bono.
Good. Yeah, good. You can say that.
Good, good. How is the culture though? You've been there a couple times to Ireland. How are the people? You know, how's the architecture? How's the landscape? How's the weather? You know all that because I haven't been there yet.
I want to talk about the architecture. Mm-hmm. You could be walking through a new neighborhood as we would go for strolls through the countryside, and there'd be like this new development. And then in the backyard would be this huge castle, ruined, you know, ruins. They keep their architecture alive as a reminder. Here we tear stuff down. Look at the Houston Astrodome. It was built when I was a kid. It's nothing. They don't use it. We build stuff to tear it down. In Europe, especially Ireland, Scotland, it's part of their past that they embrace.
That's cool.
Stone bridges. The roads that were built by the Romans are so damn narrow that sometimes you have to pull over because it's only room enough for the tourist bus to get through. And everyone's polite. They take their turns. They wave. Good day.
No road rage, huh?
No road rage over there. But if you ask an Irishman for directions, he'll look around a wee bit and he'll say, no, okay, you're going to the Bunratty Castle. If you go down the road a wee piece, you come up to the fork in the road. McGillicuddy's farm is there on the right. You'll notice by the cow. If you go left there, you come into town, you come around the corner, there's a big rock there. Now take a left there. No, maybe if you, no, take a right at the big rock. Anyway, there's a pub on the side of the road a wee piece up a bit. Go in there and ask the barmaid, how'd he get there?
Yeah, they're storytellers too, aren't they?
Oh,
the Irish. Yeah, we could tell a story or two. But yeah, I definitely got to go sooner than later, probably this year. But Brooksy, one more time, where can people find you online? What's coming up? Anything in the future? You know, I know you're in a rock band too. You play the pipes for a rock band. Are you a current member or a regular member? Or
I had been invited to sit in with Little Lover. A local AC/DC Bon Scott era tribute band. Last night we played at Marco's Bar and Grill out in Portage, sports bar. And I played the one tune with them. I rehearsed with them. But they had been trying to get me to do this for some time, probably 7 years. And I always told them, when you learn Long Way to the Top, give me a call. So a couple years ago, Rob Sherrard, the lead singer, and a friend of mine had called me, and he said, okay, Brooksy,
it's your time.
Come to the rehearsal. So that's what we did, and people love it, and, you know, we have a good time with it. It's a different application from what I normally get to do.
How do you mic that up? You just stand away from the mic? You stand far away from the microphone?
Put the chanter right down on the mic, okay. Like that. But I mean, you get so drowned out by the rest of they're loud. Sorry, Rob.
Sorry, Rob.
I gotta wear earplugs. But I just want to mention some of the band members. You got Rob Sherrard is lead singer. He's a Hobart boy. You got Marco Villarreal. That's one of the finest guitar players in the Chicagoland area. He has several other groups, Freak Johnson.
Johnson's great.
Oh, yeah.
So what is he? Oh, Marco, the guitarist?
Marco,
yeah. Yeah, I know that dude. Yeah, he's really good.
I've known him for years. He's my buddy.
Oh, is he? Yeah, that dude, he's intimidating good.
Then we got L.A. Lloyd is on the bass, and our new guitarist, or their new guitarist, is Jim Link. I believe he's from the Hammond area. And one badass drummer, Jeff Triolo. This guy rocks it out. Now, Bill Kelly from Hobart, he was the first drummer for the Little Lover. You know Bill Kelly, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never got a chance to play with Bill, but he's the one that planted the seed for me to...
To join?
To do this. To do that. Okay. Yeah, hats off to Bill for getting me involved in some rock and roll at 60 right. years old.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Age don't matter in rock and roll. Never.
Never.
Never. Nothing. No music. Nothing. Anything coming up? I know we're doing the Friendly Sons of Aaron Friday.
Friday?
Are you going to be at that?
No.
No? Okay.
The Sheriff's Band, Lake County Sheriff's, my friends are going to be playing at that event. I may do something at the end. I might play a lament. I will be playing Tuesday at the Hunky Hollow at Innsbruck. And Thursday, I've got a March Madness party out at the Yuki Country Club. I play Dire Nursing Home. This is big stuff.
No, it's awesome, man.
Dire Nursing Home has me every year. That's on Friday the 16th, and then all day Saturday. I'll be hitting...
hitting up the bars?
Yeah, I'm hired at, I think, I don't know, 8 or 10 bars.
Cool.
And I'll be uptown here, you know, going from...
End zone, we'd be at the end zone?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I go in there and play for tips. Most places will hire us, but this is my hometown, and I'm gladly go in there, and they all look forward
represent.
To...
You got to do the hand thing, though, if I see you.
Right.
You have to. You have to, man. Please.
I will, man.
Please, please. That's the best. But, yeah, man, like you said, Facebook's a good way to get to you, too. Like, if anybody wants to hit you up for funerals or birthdays or anything, a good way to get to you would be on Facebook or...
Right. I mean, I do a number of weddings. I haven't done any bar mitzvahs, but...
That's open.
I'm willing to give it a go.
We will do bar mitzvahs.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I like a felta fish.
Okay. Awesome, awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, man. We're going to have you perform here. We really appreciate you having you on here. And happy St. Patrick's Day, man.
Yeah, and one thing before we go, I'd like to mention my new project is the Celtic Guard Academy, which is going to be, we had our first meeting last week. Our first rehearsal, our first gathering of musicians will be April 9th on Monday, and that's going to be at the old junior high school where the Hobart Police Station is and the Northern Indiana Law Enforcement Academy. And cool. I've gotten such a big response without even advertising yet. I've got some really good people that I've surrounded myself with and some big ideas for having – a Celtic festival at the Bricky Bowl.
That would be badass. Yeah, we got to do that.
The mayor's behind me. I said, you know what? We can paint a green stripe down Main Street. All the restaurants can feature an Irish dish for the week.
That's cool.
We'll use Bricky Bowl for a Celtic festival. And I want to have a different approach to pipe bands. I'm going to have a Hall of Fame for pipers. We're going to offer an awards trophy to certain people, individuals that are outstanding. But I told the mayor I'd like to dye Lake George green, like they do in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he said it already
is green.
So we're saving money.
It's
right
like brown
there.
Green. Yeah, we're
saving
got
the
that
people
going.
Money. So, thank you.
So I'm saving the city money there.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. No, that's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, and I've got a lot of response, like I said. So if anyone's interested in learning piping, traditional piping or drumming, they can call me. At 219-614-7371. And again, it's the Celtic Guard Academy of Indiana.
That's really cool. That's really badass.
You can reach out to us too. You could do go to musicallymeditated@gmail.com or reach out to our Instagram
or
we'll
Facebook.
Get you in, yeah, we'll get you in touch with
Facebook.
Craig.
Yeah. Like, we'll put your information on our description, you know, if that's cool.
Outstanding. Yeah. And I think you look good in a kilt.
I should. You know, I was thinking him. He would be good, too. Like, he's a bigger guy.
I have great legs.
He has great legs.
hey.
But, no, you'd be a good drum dude. I could see you, like, just holding the drum, looking serious, hitting each side.
You know what?
Keeping the beat, ain't it? He looks like a drummer, don't he?
I think that we could get him in that drum section.
That would be perfect. You'd be a good drummer.
I'm in.
You're in?
All right.
I've been sold.
I want to do pipes. You already put me on that pedestal, so now I got to do it.
We'd love to have you.
All right. Thanks, Craig. Yeah.
All right, guys.
All right.
Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah, happy St. Paddy's Day. Everybody be safe. See you next week.
This is my 4-4 set featuring Scotland the Brave, the Rowan Tree, and the Gardens of Skye. To Luck Inside, 3-4. Thank you.
gentlemen.